Welcome back. I hope, however that time was spent, there's a sense of being nurtured. You're able to extend some care to yourself. And as I said before, we'll just move right into the sit. And again, the sit will be about a half an hour. So I'm going to invite each of us to allow the body to come into a posture that allows us to feel energetically alert, awake, available. And this can coexist even with the fatigue or the tiredness that some folks mentioned. Because really, it's an inclining, an energetic inclining to be, again, available to our own sense of awareness. How is it to be in this form, this fathom-long form, this human body on this 17th day of August? And to see what it's like to really accept this gift of generosity, of time, attention that you've given not only to yourself, but to each one of us, that we get to sit together, knowing at times our time sitting will be pleasant and sometimes it will not be pleasant, more than likely. So it's just this inclining the mind towards, again, that we are in a flow of generosity here. We all showed up to be able to practice together. Spirit Rock showed up to host us. How amazing. So allowing yourself, if this resonates, sort of sit again, take our seats in this flow of generosity, and that we are extending that flow into our own sense of, can I just rest? And be aware and available to myself in this moment and in this moment. Have to focus. The task at hand, as Christina Feldman says, is only ever as the magnitude of a moment. So for our sit today, in each moment, can we direct our attention in the body? Perhaps resting on the earth element, the bones in our body. A relative stillness in the bones, the structure that allows us to move and walk, to sit, to lie down. If the mind is busy and would like an image, call to mind an image of a mountain or trees or rocks. Those are anywhere in the Bay Area or Mount Tam, Mount Diablo, Pacific Northwest, Mount Rainier, whatever the iconic Mount Fuji that seems to just arise from the horizon. These images can just help have this sense of, oh yeah, grounded, steady, the mountain unmoved by the changing winds. We can sit in this body of ours with the attention resting on the earth element of the bones. As we take our seats, we can be unmoved by the winds of our thoughts, blowing one way and another way. Okay. Sometimes we'll get pulled into a seductive thought stream or those inevitable or really repetitive thoughts that come. Okay. And at some point, we're like, oh, wait, can I bring my attention back into the body? Feel this earth element. Hold the image of a rock or a tree, the iconic spirit rock image. A mountain, a hillside. Aligning our energies with, again, this earth element, so it is externally, so it is within this form, as a place to rest. Resting in the relative stillness of the bones, it may be hand to hands holding each other, those bones meeting and holding each other. Hands on the legs, little bones resting on a much larger bone. releasing into sense of there's nowhere else to be. There's nothing else to do. You have already committed. Please remember there's no such thing as a bad sit. We come, we take our seats, and we see how it is. Moment by moment. Yeah. This sensation, this breath. Can you accept the invitation to rest in this moment? And then in this moment. So, always lovely to sit together. Always tempting to say in my head, let's just stay sitting for the hour. So just delighted to be with you all today, and thank you again for joining us. And today I wanted to, we're going to try something new. You can let me know how you feel about it. And it might just be we're in the era of back to schoolness, and it's been so many different graduate programs that I think it's in my DNA to like school. Mid to late August. So I thought what might be fun for me and hopefully for everyone would be to actually drop into the teachings of the Paramis. I think it was in May. I gave a talk on the constellation of the Paramis being the 10 perfections of the heart, that 10 potentialities of the heart, the potentials of the heart, which I like a lot. And I'll get into the list, but things like truthfulness, equanimity, patience, loving kindness, wisdom, things like that. Wonderful qualities. And those of you who know me for any time at all know that I'm constantly talking about the book written by Ajahn Sutito called Paramis Crossing: Ways to Cross Life's Floods. This book is available on ebook. It's free. So if you want to join me in the book study version, please do so. It is really one of my desert island books that I would take if I was stuck on a desert island, because of how he walks through the Paramis with such, it's just so practical. He writes as a monastic who's been an abbot of different monasteries, and the challenges of living in community, and he really speaks from the heart and has experience. So that's the book I'm going to use, and we'll just see how it is and see how it goes. If you're game, for about the next 10 weeks or so, we'll see. Thank you, Carlita, just put that in chat. So that's where it's available. And in the intro of the book, he writes sort of why Siddhartha, of that he was able to do so much in his lifetime, achieve such levels of insight and clarity and stillness in the mind. And he didn't have a teacher. Sort of this is the musings of those that lived with him, like, why him? I don't know if why not me was part of the conversation, but sort of looking to him like, And over after he passed, as the conversation, this thread of conversation continued, the thinking was, it must have been all those past lives. And then all these stories came in fables and of the Janaka tales of the lives previously to Siddhartha's life, where he inhabited these different, what he sought in each of these different lifetimes to really embody these qualities. So they're children now, they're sort of children's stories available at the Spirit Rock Bookstore and elsewhere, but just these different tales about how long it took for the Buddha to be able to incarnate into a life of such profound wisdom and awakening. So these paramis have sort of been collected as the teachings of this is, I'm gonna say the wise heart, but it's not so much the wise heart. For me, I hold them as sort of the most embodied heart for us to really drop into both the in the heart mind in Buddhism. They're not separate. It's sort of a unit, the congruence. And I've been dabbling with a heart math institute that really points towards how do we develop a congruence, heart congruence. And I feel like these paramis and through these teachings as a practice really allows, so if I can embody qualities of generosity, of integrity, of renunciation, by which I mean, is this serving me? Is this stressing me out? Looking at letting go of that which isn't serving us. And on and on, each quality has their way. It's not linear A to B, but more how each of these heart qualities really support each other. So let me name them, see if I can do it without looking, but generosity, the first. And really most of the Buddhist teachings start with generosity. The image of the teachings that's often given is sort of a bridge spanning a river. The bridge has three pillars. The first pillar is that of generosity. The second is of integrity, and the third is of mindfulness. And these are pillars, the building blocks, they're the support of how we go from one side of the river to the other. This crossing over is one way, again, starts with generosity. The Paramis also starts with generosity. This, because how do we, to be available for the teachings, the heart does kind of need to be open. And the Pali word for generosity is dana. The second of the Paramis, integrity, sila. Third, renunciation, nikama, I think. I'll leave out the Pali when I don't know. But so generosity, integrity, renunciation, wisdom, energy, effort, patience, truthfulness, loving kindness, equanimity. I think that's 10. So these different, again, how can we together in this journey of 10 weeks or so, maybe a little more if I digress, to really play in this role, but how can we embody these qualities, both as we practice internally, how is it as the 10, that soil, that inner soil within each of us, and then how are we out in the world? I think one of the things I so love about this book is he's really pointing to, it's great what we can do on the cushion. It's awesome what we can do when we have the availability to go on retreat. Amazing. And this book, I feel, is really, really like, yeah, but when we're out in the world, that's when it's hard. And you know, I've read from this book so many times, and I think it was even last week, that notion of like, yeah, compassion is a great idea when we're thinking about, or it's easy to touch into compassion if we're thinking about people in Maui that we know, or Carolyn shared about friends that she's, friends and family she's concerned about fires in the Northwest territories there. It's like, oh, but when we're sitting with the mind, it's so annoying and thinking the same repetitive, annoying thoughts. Compassion might not be the first thing that comes up. Or so how can we really utilize these tools? And again, it's the practicality that I really love and sort of setting this arc for us to journey together on, of how to really bring, to make this tangible. How can this actually show up in my day-to-day relationships with family, with the work that I'm doing, with the community, with the challenges on this earth? Oh my goodness. How do we engage with the news? If we engage with the news, how can we show up from a place that we are really embodying our inner goodness, our inner wisdom? I would say our Buddha nature. Yeah. So, a lot of, I don't know if you can see all the notations, but I was going to share a little bit from the opening, first chapter. Sorry. Yeah, resolve. Okay, well, let me give the list again, because now I have it in front of me. Generosity, integrity, renunciation, discernment or wisdom, energy, and effort. Patience, truthfulness, resolve. That's kind of, resolve and energy are similar. Kindness and equanimity. The Paramis provide a template for the mind's energies and activities that isn't an extra to all the things we might have to do, but encompasses our talking and working, our relationships and interactions with others, our times of private introspection, our own decision-making, and the forming of our life's directions. We practice morality and patience and all or any of the rest while we are engaged at work or minding the children or stuck in a traffic jam. The Parami takes spiritual practice into areas of our lives where we get confused, where we're subject to social pressure and are often strongly influenced by stress or stress-forming assumptions, providing alternative ways to orient the mind in the stream of daily events. The perfections can derail obstructive inner activities and leave the mind clear. Cultivating Parami means you get to steer your life out of the floods. And the four floods are overwhelm, can be overwhelm. The place when we do feel overwhelmed, we are swimming in waters where we aren't swimming. We can feel overwhelmed, right? Overwhelmed by the water. And the different floods are described as getting caught up in that, the sense pleasures, the sensuality of life, that what we want, the craving, the inadvertence, becoming, the flood of becoming, where we're overly invested in who we are, our identity, seeking the status that we cultivate or the professions that we cultivate as a means of achieving happiness. As we know, it doesn't work that way. So sort of the trance, he talks about the trance of sense pleasures, the trance of becoming. And these paramis, wisdom, generosity, patience, really allow us to kind of break out of that trance to really have clear seeing, clear understanding of what is going on here, what's actually going on here versus my clouded, confused, hindered perceptions of things. The other two floods that he speaks about, fixed views. So that's in the Metta Sutta. It's said to be the sublime abiding by not holding on to fixed views. We will not be reborn into this world. So that the fixity, the rigidity that we see all the time out in the world, sometimes we can see it in ourselves, but that fixed viewsness, I'm this, you're that. And then the most fundamental of all the floods is ignorance. And I was with my sister over the weekend and we were talking about goodness and evil. And our family, I've shared before, we were raised very Catholic. And this question about evil, and it's not a word that I resonate with. And she was talking about evil. I was like, what about evil? And I was like, that's just ignorance. But I meant it from this place. It's not wise. It's like wrong view, taken to terrible consequences. But this, the fundamental, when we are caught in a place of ignorance, of wrong view, of wrong thinking, and I'm meaning this in the Buddhist sense of like the opposite of the paramis, well, greed, hatred, and delusion, when we're bound by some of those threads or knots or prison chains, we are going to move from a place of ignorance. I think it's fair to say we will most likely be causing harm, right? Because we're out of congruence. So how do we step out of the tangle of fear thinking, as Rumi would say, to step into a place where we can embody discernment, wisdom, patience, so we can see clearly, we can move from integrity. Yeah. Touching the truth, Suchicho writes, your mind is able to return to healing. How great is that? When we can touch into the truth that is born out of clear seeing, and when the mind is steady, when the heart is abiding in these potentials. If perfection is a word that you don't like, I was listening to Philip Moffat the other night. He's like, oh, perfections, don't like it. When he used aspirations, I like the idea of potentials. I have to say, I kind of like the idea of perfections, not that we are striving to become perfect, but when we can abide in these qualities, it's like, yeah, that's how the heart's supposed to work. Like that, sort of achieving its most beautiful quality. But this idea of moving from this place of truth and seeing clearly, then the mind is able to return to healing. I love that. Let's come back into this book. So let's not get entangled in the book. So for generosity, again, the Pali word is dana. And you hear if anyone's at retreat, talk about dana. We talk about dana every time that you register for this class. You actually financially support me and you support Spirit Rock. So we are in a flow of generosity despite our all showing up here. And thank you for that. And this, what I wanted to sort of point to in the generosity, because you all have heard me talk about this generosity before, but it's being in the flow of it, of the giving and taking and of the receiving. And I haven't told this in a long time because my daughter is now 15, but when she was little, we lived briefly in a couple of years in Colorado, and we'd fly home to see family and folks in Colorado, California. And to give my three-year-old something to do, we'd buy the Ghirardelli chocolates that come in a square. And I'd be like, why don't you give some away? And some people would say no. I'm like, I don't take chocolate. And I was always like, my own indignation, like, I'm not going to take chocolate from my cute 3-year-old kid. But that just sort of, how do we develop this capacity of giving? But it's nice. And she had made the comment one time, like, it's nicer when people accept it. Like, it's nicer when we can, our gifts can be received, whether it's a square of chocolate or a smile or some actual gift, or just, again, the flow of being in a sense of giving and receiving. Yeah. It's nicer to be in the flow. And I think to pay attention, something to play with is, where is it? And how can we most broadly define a sense of generosity that it's not, I hand someone money, I get something in return. Or I hand someone a gift, do I get something in return? But it's so much wider and more, and so much deeper. This flow of generosity, again, it's an energetics. The Buddha was talking to his son, this kid, I think when he was like 7 or something, and talking about a generosity, and that with generosity, you can get threefold back, because you think about being generous and sort of the delight, like, oh, I'm going to do this for somebody. And then you actually do it. And that's great. And then you get to reflect back on, oh, I did that thing. And that was so nice. And he's like, you get a lot of bang out of the, you get a lot of benefit or the merit, a lot of merit from one generous act. And his teaching to his son was like, this is good to think about. This is a good place to put the mind to that line of, so the mind, what the mind ponders upon, so inclines the mind. So if we incline ourselves to notice acts of generosity, and again, like the sun on our face, the opening of a flower, the breeze when it's hot, those kinds of things, not like the check that comes in the mail that might not come, but the idea more of, how do we start to really expand our notion of noting, paying attention to when we receive, when we are able to take delight. I think that is a form of generosity, when we can look at something like, that's so beautiful. There's a flow there of noting and accepting, and then the delight in our own energy then is fed back, that being a feedback loop. We can also take it into our interactions with humans, when you actually do get someone to smile at you or say hello or say thank you, or we're driving, all those different ways. And to play with, perhaps now and the next week, sort of, where can we notice when we are in the flow of generosity, and where are we, when are we not? I've shared some of this before, but I remember in my marriage, there were times that there were ways that my husband was acting, being generous, but I couldn't see it at the time. It just annoyed me. And it took some back. I'm like, oh, like, you think it's this, but I'm having an experience of it being something else, and being able to understand who we're in relation with, of what are their, how sort of the love languages, this is my expression, I'm offering this to you. And how heartbreaking it is to not have that accepted, or to realize, like, oh, you've been offering this to me and I haven't been accepting it. That's like a crushing sense. So how can we pay attention to the people that we are in relation with regularly? How do they express their love? And am I noticing it? Because if it's not the way I do it, I might not. So really being able to look sort of at the internal experience of generosity, how it is within my own system, how I like to offer it, and how does somebody else, and are we tracking? Yeah. I'm debating bringing something else in, but I'm gonna let it go for now. So in this, yeah, connection through generosity. There's an island. Where's this? And he was reading a while ago about a social model that's used on some islands in an Indonesia archipelago, where the aim is to gain as much debt as possible. What happens is this: you get in your canoe with your pig and you paddle over to the other island, where you give somebody your pig and they give you a coconut. Well, then they're indebted to you because your pig was worth more than their coconut. And now you have a bond with them because they're indebted to you. And then they take your pig and they swap it for somebody else's pineapple. So that person is now indebted to them. And in that way, they gradually create a whole network of feeling connected. of belonging and owing something to everybody else. This movement of energy enacted between people and often between a person and the land is what constitutes a firm sense of being in the world rather than trying to find one's place in the world, which always leads to stress. Right? That certainly turns things on their head, but the idea that the richer you are in relationships is based upon how indebted you are to others. And we live in a culture, dominant culture, that really we kind of do our best not to be indebted, right? Or do our best to not overly owe people. And just even imagine being in a culture where it's flipped. I have all these ties with other people. How do we connect ourselves with others? Through a sense of generosity and open-handedness. Yeah. But that open hand that both offers and accepts. Okay, let me switch gears a little bit. I think I shared this a couple months ago, but I love it. By Ray Lucere, Liquid Generosity. The ocean offers her abundance. Are you jealous of the ocean's generosity? Why would she refuse to give this gift to anyone? Fish do not hold her sacred liquid in cups. They swim in huge freedom. Be a fish. Swim in your boundless abundance. Share that abundance. Generosity is only limited by your unwillingness. Yeah. This often, this is frequently shared metaphor, but sort of the sun does not discriminate where she shines her light. You know, it's on the weeds, the trees, the beautiful, the not beautiful. The sun does not discriminate. How can we cultivate a heart that does not discriminate? It can discern. You know, we're not surrendering any kind of wisdom or discernment, but this idea of being able to radiate a sense of generosity that is irrespective of the external. It's so strong within. This kind of fits the from Rumi, the ground's generosity takes in our compost and grows beauty. Try to be more like the ground. And again, just to reiterate that, Rumi's, be empty of worry. Think of who created thought. Why do you stay in prison when the door is so wide open? Move outside the tangle of fear thinking. Live in silence. Flow down and down and down and always widening rings of being. But also, I would say, always widening rings of being present, of being awake and available. We step out of the tangle of fear thinking and we can drop into a place of, oh, I can embody this. I can embody this heart quality. Okay, so I'm going to read one more poem that's a little long, and then we're going to do an exercise. So some of you may have heard it before, but okay. It's called At the Doorway by David Wagner. And again, it's a little long. So at the doorway, all actors look for them. The defining moments when a character does is what he is. The script may say he goes to the door and exits, or she goes out the door, stage left. But you see your fingers touching the doorknob, closing around it, turning it as if by themselves. The latch slides out of the strike plate. The door swings on its hinges and you're about to take that step over the threshold into a different light. For the audience, you may simply be disappearing from the scene. Yet in those few seconds, you can reach for the knob as the last object on earth you want it to touch, or you take it warmly, like the hand your father offered once in forgiveness and afterward kept to himself. Or you stand there briefly, as bewildered as by the door of a walk-in time lock safe. Stand there and stare at the whole concept of shutness, like a rat whose maze has been rebaffled overnight. Stand still and quiver, unable to turn around or to go left or right. Or you can grasp it with a sly, soundless discretion, open it inch by inch, testing each fraction of torque on the spindles on tiptoe. Slip yourself through the upright slot and press the lock style silently back into its frame. for. You can use your shoulder or the hard heel of your shoe in a leg thrust to break it open. Or you can approach the door as if accustomed to having all barriers open by themselves. You can wrench aside this unauthorized interruption of your progress and then leave it ajar for others to do with as they see fit. Or you can stand at ease and give the impression that you can see through this door or any other door and have no need to take your physical self to the other side. Or you can turn the knob as if at last nothing could please you more, your body language filled with expectations of joy at where you're going, holding yourself momentarily in the posture of an awestruck pilgrim at the gate, though you know you'll only be stepping out against the scrim or a wobbly flat daubed with a landscape, a scribble of leaves, a hint of flowers, the bare suggestion of a garden. So I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. And in a way, what I'm asking us to do together is to move through this doorway from the lands that we are now through a doorway into a land of really dropping into exploring the perfections of the heart, the potentialities of the heart, the aspirations of the heart. And again, in this other side of the door, await a stronger embodied sense, potentially, of generosity, of integrity, of wisdom, renunciation, truthfulness, patience, resolve, loving kindness, equanimity. And this is not to say on this side of the door, we don't embody those qualities. We don't look for them or engage with them, not at all. But what I'm asking, if anyone is so game, is to join me in crossing through this doorway into the intentionality of engaging with these heart qualities, which I believe is our birthright, is our homecoming. So if you can imagine, as we stand beneath our different doorways, whatever it might look like, whatever comes to mind of where you are now, in this doorway that we will pass through together to come home to the beauty and strength and wisdom and trustworthiness of our own heart. And imagine what this doorway looks like as we step through this first step, or paver, or porch, or whatever it is that you first step upon after crossing the threshold. This step of generosity of Donna. Imagining, if it's helpful, sort of the 9 paving stones or the doorways or whatever it is, those other, other 9 perfections that will await for us over the week. But how is it to let yourself stand on this first stone, my image, of generosity, the open heart, a heart that is willing to be in the flow of giving and receiving. To take a moment to look around at this new land that you are now facing, the land of the awakened heart, to this homeland that is your birthright, standing on this first step of generosity. What's it look like? And we feel the play of the sun on our face, perhaps the smell of roses that are there. Any animals that come, anything that's beautiful that catches your eye. The sound of water. Can you feel how it is just in the natural world to be in this flow of generosity, to be accepting that which is beautiful, that energetically changes our field to be lighter and brighter, more open-hearted. To pause here, perhaps for the last time, look again at the horizon we will be exploring together, the remaining paramis. Again, note how the body feels. If we really allow ourselves to drop into access, the open-heartedness of being in a place of generosity. How that feels. And then allowing the attention to just come back because your body's sitting here. I'll stop here. And invite you to open your eyes. And thank you so much for your kind attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.